Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 381 of the Roguecast, recorded August 2nd, 2022. Burner's Escape Room. Welcome to August.
It's very different from the previous months.
Yes.
It's a slightly different kind of scald to the air outside.
You mean a warrior bard?
It took me a minute to even figure out what you were saying. The word scald doesn't come up too much.
I know.
But yes, that's what I meant.
I assumed you meant the warrior bard.
When I said earlier that
good
it's...
good scald and bad scald that, for the day, I'm a different kind of scald.
That it's scalding outside.
Yes.
What I meant is a bunch of Viking warrior poets were wandering
yes.
the streets.
Yeah, I figured that. Which is weird, but, you know, it's Austin.
That's how you know Ragnarok's coming.
Yeah, the scalds are roaming the streets. anyway, I guess we'll just jump right into the store news stuff. We had a big bunch of stuff come in last week.
Yeah.
New Pathfinder, Dark Archive, which has... I forget what exactly this one is. It's like, it's more character classes and stuff.
Yeah. But I forget the overall theme of it.
Archive makes it sound like it's like bounty hunters and assassins or necromancers.
Yeah, I think it's like thaumaturge and
yeah. Okay. I think it's like mystical artifact kind of stuff.
Right. There's a board game called Monuments that looks really cool. I guess each one of you is playing a civilization and you're building them. It's like the monuments of different things.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to look at the back of it. I did feel its heft though. It's a very heavy game.
Yep. And then Framework, which looks like a sort of abstract game. It's by Reiner Knizia. It's the other one.
Rosenberg. Yep, those are the two names I know.
Yeah, those guys make games. Like, every month there's a new Reiner Knizia and new Yoey Rosenberg game.
Yep.
I'm sure he's just chained to a desk and whatever factory.
If you look game, can I please be free
if
now?
If you read the instructions carefully on the game, you'll notice that every first letter spells out, please send help.
He's making the longest SOS note.
And no one has noticed because no one apparently reads the rules.
These are just great games.
And this latest Yoey Rosenberg game, please let me out of this hellscape I've been trapped in for years. I don't know what the theme is. I can't get it.
I feel it was on the notes.
Another victory for Yoey Rosenberg.
For
it's a great game.
8.2 on Board Game Geek.
Yeah, haven't read the instructions, but 8.2.
Yeah, no. I learned it
by watching a YouTube video.
His new game, Please Free Me, Yoey Rosenberg, from the torment that I am stuck in, is so good.
I am a fan of, like, from a couple years back, the just getting me a lockpick would help.
We also got the Deadly Dinner Games. These are like a riff on the old How to Host a Murder movie. Red Carpet Ruins and The Last Rose, which Red Carpet Ruins is a Hollywood theme, Last Rose is a bachelor theme.
Yeah, but the Hollywood theme one is like a 1920s Hollywood thing, which is a really cool kind of
that's fun. It sort of seems like with the breakout escape room games that they've been doing in the last few years.
Murder mystery games.
That murder mystery games making a comeback seems like a good idea.
And a murder mystery thing set on, like, The Bachelor is kind of a fun idea.
That reminds me, by the way, we should be getting our new display for Unlock this week.
Yeah.
Which, so if you have not played the Unlock escape room games, it will be a brand new one.
And that includes, we're getting a display of all of them, including, like, the Star Wars one.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good Unlock games.
There are.
I want to play the Star Wars one.
I know, we're definitely in theme one.
That's an exit.
I know, but
that's an off-brand, I don't play it. No, I've had customers who prefer the exit games, so it's like a Coke-Pepsi thing. I believe Coke is the bigger, that's Unlock. Pepsi is, or maybe it's, you know, maybe it's...
is that trying to be new Coke?
What's the ginger ale one? Maybe it's Verner's.
Verner's Escape Rooms.
Or maybe it's Big Red. I don't know. I haven't played an exit game. I don't have a good sense of them yet.
I always thought Schweppes or Canada Dry for my ginger ale, not Verner's.
Verner's is what they do in the Northlands. That's a big thing up north.
We also got Vampire Rivals, Heart of Europe, which is the expandable card game from Renegade.
Yep.
And we got the X of Swords HeroClix,
which are popular.
Came in, sold out. Did we get them
back in today?
Back in today. Okay, cool.
So this there's organized play. We're not doing the organized play for it, but there's a lot of like cool swords and weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's a cool X-Men theme set. I am going to Gen Con this week.
Yes, you are.
So I will come back next week with tons of news about gaming and games that will be coming out this year.
Nice.
And I guess we'll move without moving to news.
You can look for Yoey Rosenberg's latest Please send me a cake with a file in it.
Not a lot of news this week, but there is the Andor trailer.
Right. This is the Star Wars Andor.
Yep.
And for people who might have forgot who Cassian Andor is, he's the dude from Rogue One. He didn't make it out. Spoiler warning.
None of them did. Unfortunately, none of them did.
Yeah.
But we know his end, but we were told of his beginnings, yep. And this is...
Just as a minor thing, Rogue One was, what, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
Something like that? Weirdly, like, I don't think... who's the actor playing him?
Oh, man.
Crap, why'd you do that?
Right. Because I need you to look it up on your phone now.
Okay.
Whatever it was, I was like, watching this trailer, and I was like, oh, is he going to look like, you know, like he's 50 years old now? He does not. He still looks young. Yeah. If anything, like maybe just with makeup Diego and stuff Luna. Like that. Diego Luna,
yeah.
He looks, he actually looks somehow younger than he did 5 years ago.
He's a good actor, and I think kind of him at the helm of this... you know, ship.
Yeah.
Although I know he's not going to be like the main focus. It definitely looks like this is going across.
I mean, I actually didn't assume that. I assumed that it may be a large cast, but I figure he still will be the linchpin of it.
Yeah, I mean, he will be, but I mean, this is definitely incorporating like Mon Mothma.
It's got his name in it.
It does.
It's not called Mothma.
Which would be like Mothman Chronicles.
It's not called Bail Organa.
Hey, you know, Leia wasn't even credited in the Obi-Wan series. So.
That's true. In Rogue One, he was like the guy, at least, you know, that movie was a little muddled in its themes.
Yeah.
But he was the guy who was early on, they presented as the dude who'll do whatever it takes to get the rebels through this, yeah. Including killing like, their own informants rather than have them give up something under torture or whatever.
Right.
And so here we see the making of the revolutionary. There were flashbacks that we've seen, I guess, in the first trailer to, like his planet, I think, becomes under Imperial rule.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're going to see, I don't know if it's a regular thing, but you're definitely going to see some flashbacks of him as a kid learning how to smash the Empire, I guess.
Yeah, which is awesome.
It kind of guerrilla warfare, it looks like, you know, it's... man, Star Wars, that's the roots of all Star Wars stuff, is essentially Vietnam.
Yep.
Like, literally, George Lucas, you know, was, I think, thinking of the rebels as representing the Viet Cong. Have seen stuff about this before. He's been upfront about it in some of the interviews. Which, by the way, if they're the Viet Cong, then guess who plays who the Empire is? we'll see the early days of the Rebellion, with where it looks like a... Mon Mothma's kind of doing, like, political maneuvering. She said that people are just finding her a nuisance, so I think it's, like, something about how she's presenting herself is, like, maybe frivolous or something like that, but, like, secretly she's getting stuff done, which I think is an interesting take on the character. Who else do we see?
Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård's playing a new... I can't quite tell if
he's
like
looks
a,
like an Imperial officer that is actually working with the Rebellion.
That's kind of the vibe I got.
Which somebody, I thought was a really good idea.
Does somebody say like he's getting old or he's out of practice or whatever?
I think it's like the veneer is slipping between the Rebellion and like people can see that he might be turning a little bit.
Okay.
I think that was referenced to maybe you're losing it a little
like,
bit.
Like, is he going to be some kind of mentor figure for
Cassian? I don't know. It looked like that,
or maybe his contact or something.
Yeah, I sort of got that vibe.
We saw
him. We saw him talking to Saw Gerrera.
It's pretty big, yeah. He's the big revolutionary.
Yeah, and I was telling Dave off mic that, I mean, this makes Saw Gerrera in like every version of the cartoons.
Yep.
He was in Rogue One. He was in Fallen Order.
The video game.
And now he's in this. I mean, he is like one of the most portrayed, and and most of the time has been portrayed by...
Forrest Whitaker. Yep. So that should be fun. He himself is also portrayed as the sort of more extreme side of the Rebellion.
The big extreme.
Yep. What was I going to say? Something about him. Oh, Nick, in Fallen Order, I believe we were both amused by the fact that he has a grappling hook gun, and occasionally will say something, you know, very revolutionary, then fire it up into the air and fly away onto the ruins of whatever downed Star Destroyer or whatever you're near to.
It's very entertaining.
And it's kind of funny because he wears this big, bulky armor that almost looks like more like Warhammer armor sometimes.
A little bit.
And he's just like, whee, like Batman 89 launching
his
away.
His body is basically falling apart at this point. It's been... parts of him are robot.
Is that because of the Geonosis stuff?
I think part of it is, but I know he's like missing one arm, missing a foot.
Well, that's various what he gets for kind smoking, of like gorilla death sticks. It's yeah. death sticks.
Stay away from death sticks, kids.
So I was interesting because this is directed by Tony Gilroy, who actually directed Rogue One.
Oh.
Neither here nor there. I liked Rogue One for what it was. I know you've...
Is the whole show or just like the first episode?
No,
or something?
He's directing all of it.
Yeah. When it said... That was the thing. I want to bust to you guys you're talking about, but it opened with from the creators of Rogue One, and I'm like, oh, no.
Well, Rogue One has grown on me, but it is definitely like a kind of messy movie. Like, But there's a lot of stuff I like in it, yeah. I guess I'd say.
I also heard that this was not...
The aesthetics do look like they sort of mesh pretty good with Rogue One, and it's sort of more washed out, you know, occupied cities,
well, from what I also
bombed
heard,
out,
they
and
film...
exploited, like, mined area. You know, I say mined, like, as if they've gone in and done mining, not left landmines.
Yeah, I also have heard that this was not filmed against their giant revolutionary like projector screen.
Like the AR?
AR like wall. What, Mandalorian and a couple of others. This is actually a lot of practical actual sets okay. and places that I thought was nice to hear.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to show the guerrilla fighters and stuff out there in forests and mountains and things like that, there is probably something, a little bit something to be said for having to actually shoot there, feel that roughness yeah. and all that stuff.
I am, after this trailer, more excited for this film. I like Rogue One, so
it's
I'm
funny,
down
there's,
with
there's
it.
A writer, Justin Jordan, who writes a bunch of comic yeah. stuff. He's posting, today I think he was just doing a sort of like, starting discussion thing. But he's like, he basically threw out, he's like, I wonder if Solo had been released before Rogue One, if Solo would be the one that people liked, and if Rogue One would be the one, if their order of release was part of the problem. Because here's the thing, I think Justin comes down where I do, of course. Rogue One, I lose interest in every time I watch it, I like it a little less. Mm. Whereas Solo, I still think is a good movie that got pilloried because they tried to do all of his origin stuff. If they took out all the origin stuff and just did that heist movie stuff,
yeah,
stuff that's in it, I think it works.
I kind of like the origin stuff.
it's a little clunky to do everything happening yeah. in that one day, though.
It's spread out over a bit
it's
of time.
It's spread out over a bit over time.
But I think that people, for better or worse, I think that what they liked about Rogue One, in the sort of the same way I, as a kid, was like, oh yeah, X-Men are my favorite, they're hardcore, yeah, sometimes they'll kill if they have to. It was the edgy Star Wars movie. It's the war Star Wars movie. It's the one where everybody dies.
It's the Dirty Dozen. It's the yeah. You know, it's that kind of aesthetic.
And I think it's actually it is not a. I don't love the direction in it, but I like scenes in it and I like characters in it and stuff like that. Like I like elements.
I think my overall problem with Rogue One is the fact that we get introduced to these characters, but we don't get enough of them. So sort of backtracking a little bit and seeing
Andor
more
himself
of Andor.
Is even like yeah, like he is a somewhat. Like, early on, he's real hardcore, but it seems like pretty quickly he's not as hardcore.
Yeah.
like it wasn't too long. Like, you didn't see this big character growth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yes, I guess by the end of it, he, like, the big thing is he doesn't take the shot when he has it at her Jyn Erso?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
At her dad when he could have assassinated
Galen.
Him.
I think it's Galen Erso.
Yeah. My main problem with Rogue One was they spent about 20 minutes getting that data crystal from the archives or whatever that looked like a giant claw machine. And I was like, there's just got to be a better way.
Empire really sucks at organizational skills, so it took a while.
They are great at organizational skills.
Maybe they're great at hiding
the names.
They're
the Romans of their time. But,
they were just rolling really shitty on their checks.
Now that's possible.
I got to admit, part of my disappointment is that I was looking forward to seeing this in a couple weeks, and now it got moved to September.
It did, but we're
the aching pain of like an extra month or two.
That's hard.
But we're also getting three episodes to start.
Randy, don't you remember our Star Wars origins? Whole years in between Star Wars movies.
Yes, I remember. It sucked. I don't want that.
What about the from a couple of years ago where you were done with Star Wars?
You mean a month from now when I'll say I'm done with Star Wars again?
It's for me, this is hitting at a pretty good time because I'm running a Star Wars role-playing game. It's set in the Rebellion era, and so like all that vibe is good.
Yeah.
And honestly, the fact that this guy is directing it, hopefully he's also somewhat grown. I know that movie in particular was... I think it had a bunch of issues going on.
It did.
Like, there was just behind the scenes, the editing and all that stuff was complicated. and they sort of changed visions of it a little bit.
I heard the K2SO said something racist, and they had to recast him.
I don't think they would have kept that.
K2SO
he got
not
canceled.
Yeah, he got canceled. Originally, he was a gunk droid, and they recast him.
He's not in this trailer at all.
No, I mean it's before he's met him.
Yeah. We do get a new little droid though, which I'm kind of
excited
cute. To see. Yeah, the it's little like, red kind of on. Yeah. It looked like Tink Treads.
Yeah, he looked like a slightly energetic gunk.
Yes, gunk.
But anyway, I'm pretty hyped for it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I will enjoy all Star Wars at any time.
And as a reminder, Nick is working on a big Star Wars display right now.
It's true,
but yeah. I mean, we're all hyped for it. It's all looks very exciting.
But it can't possibly match
but
up
it
to.
It cannot possibly match for the next trailer.
Do we even want to discuss this one?
We should talk about.
All right.
There's a Spirit Halloween movie.
Right, which we have discussed. Before.
We mentioned a couple weeks back, and
so the only thing this looks cheesy as hell. Yes. I said after the end of the trailer, I'm like, there's two ways it's going to go. And he was like, no, there's one way it's going to go.
Yes.
I guess I'm the one who had hope that it might be, like, it might knowingly be cheesy and kind of a fun way. It's kids on bikes.
It actually looked a little lower budget than I expected it to be.
I guess that's
like,
fair.
What was the movie with Jack Black that was like a Halloween movie? It was based on a kid's book. House with a Clock in Its Walls.
Oh,
but
yeah.
also Goosebumps, sure. Let's use both of those.
Both of those are
fairly polished movies,
yeah,
right?
They're fun.
Whether they're a little schlocky or not, but they're pretty polished. This one had the look of kind of like direct-to-video.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, new incarnation of Are You Afraid of the Dark? Or, you know, kind of a cheapy look to it. Christopher Lloyd plays a role in it. But at its basics, it's some kids who are spending the night in a Spirit Halloween store. That's supposed to be haunted. Which, by the way, I think is a good premise.
Yeah, that's
like,
a good premise.
For kind of a cheesy kids movie, a horror movie, that's a good premise.
But I will say this, the ghost played by Christopher Lloyd,
yeah,
I found it interesting that basically he was like foreclosing on someone's property.
Yeah.
And now he haunts a Spirit Halloween store, where that's what they do. They just move into abandoned properties. If they're doing some riff on that, that could be fun.
Yeah.
That's the part that gave me hope. I'm like,
yeah.
The ghost is someone who used to foreclose on things, and now he lives in a place that takes over abandoned buildings. Like, that could be fun.
It just didn't look like
it. But it does not look great. It does not look great.
Like, the jokes were, like, real kind of, like, hacky sort of jokes. Yeah.
And, like, all the monsters, if you've ever been to a Spirit of Halloween store, you'll definitely recognize the monsters that come alive.
Yeah, yeah, it's got lots of the sort of the big animatronic things and, like, a creepy fortune-teller lady.
Yeah.
I did, you know, like, some of that was, like, kind of fun-ish looking, but I'm going to say this sounds like sort of goofy fun thing. Upon actually seeing it, looks like it could just be bad.
Yeah.
Could just be bad.
I think it's direct to streaming or something.
I mean, that makes
sense. I also, you know what it reminded me of? And I know that most people will disagree with me on this because I know it's a beloved thing. What's that Halloween movie that every woman I know loves?
Hocus Pocus?
Yeah.
Hocus Pocus is better.
I watched Hocus Pocus and I was like, why do people like this?
Hocus Pocus is like one of those you gotta watch it when you're young to hook into it.
Are people dumb when they're young?
Yes.
It's like the writing is so awful. The jokes don't land.
Look, you were just telling me the other day how good the Goonies was, and it's the same thing.
I told you the Goonies didn't age with me.
Okay.
I have the mental fondness for it, but it's not quite. It doesn't hold up for me.
I like all these things.
Nick, you just like to press play.
Yeah, but those legitimately are entertaining. Hocus Pocus is not a well-written, great thing, but there's some charm there.
I guess. I watched Hocus Pocus for the first time last year, and I was like... Okay.
I guess what I would say is, like, yes, I can see that. I can see that. But I'm always like, I see something like that, and I was like, oh, there are movies like, not everything can be, Galaxy Quest or whatever.
Right.
But there are movies that are kind of like, have a schlocky veneer, but some real wit to the writing. And I was like, I just want more of those. You know?
Yeah.
Hocus Pocus could have been like the Galaxy Quest. And like, pop culturally it is. Like,
yeah.
It won.
It did. I mean, there's a sequel coming out this year.
And there's the memes galore about how much everybody loves it, to the point where I'm like, okay.
I mean, it's a good cast. I mean, Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker.
Sure. There's lots of bad movies with good casts.
You mentioned, Nick, that Spirit was going to streaming, but that doesn't necessarily mean to be bad. I mean, it is going to be bad, but that's not why. Because there's some good stuff coming to streaming this weekend. Prey, the new Predator movie, which all people... The reviews are great for.
The reviews are great.
Yep.
I'm trying not to watch any more trailers. I'm just gonna.
I'm not watching any trailers. So I'm just. Have we heard that like there's not a lot of like dialogue in it?
I think that's true. And what there is both is going to, I think, release initially in English, but there is going to be a version that is in Cherokee?
I believe that is correct.
And then do you guys think that they will do a version later on where people don't understand it, where they do, like, voiceover narration? Like, I never thought I'd see the Predator.
They're going to get Harrison Ford to come out of retirement and do the voiceover.
Yeah.
Rick Decker, I was looking at a Esper that showed me the past. Shit, was I going to say? No, they need to do a version that's all in Predator talk.
Click, 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 it clicks
and whispers. Anytime.
I'm looking forward to it. And also, this Friday is the Sandman Netflix show.
Yeah,
which also trepidatious but hopeful.
Yep, I think I am probably more on the hopeful side after having watched a clip from it.
Yeah,
but I do see basically. I think it's going to, at the very least, have good parts. Whether it holds together as a whole, that's the big question for me.
And I'm, of course, going to be out of town for all of it, so I'm going to have to like get back on Monday and binge a whole bunch of TV.
You don't think you'll be able to like watch any of it in the hotel or something?
I don't think so. I think I'm going to be pretty busy. It sounds like Gen Con is a like all-day kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's also Reservation...
I'll text you how it is.
Oh, thank you.
Second season of Reservation Dogs starts this week.
I never finished that first season.
I want to try that out.
Then in the movie theaters, Bullet Train hits.
I'm excited for Bullet Train.
And then the weird Pete Davidson kind of like horror flick, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. It's getting like really rave reviews. Have you seen this trailer?
I watched the trailer once, but I've like kind of forgotten what it shows. I just remember thinking, I was like, is that Pete Davidson?
It's a game. It's like a game you play where someone's like...
But it's like everybody's like in like this darkened like house. Yeah, they throw a party. And somebody starts actually murdering people. It's supposed to
but
be
like
really
it's
good.
Supposed to be like some game that's like a LARPy thing.
Yeah, yeah. You turn the lights off, somebody gets murdered, and then you try to figure out who the murderer is.
When a group of rich 20-somethings plan a hurricane party at a remote family mansion, a party goes awry, and this fresh and funny look at backstabbing fake friends in one party gone very, very wrong.
Okay, that sounds like a pretty good premise.
Yeah, it's.
I don't think I'm a big Pete Davidson.
I think he plays like a small part. Also, Lee Pace is in it, which I really like Lee Pace.
Yeah.
And a bunch of characters that have been in, character actors that have been in stuff, but I don't know. This one is
well,
on my...
if it's getting good reviews, that's
I mean,
good.
It's at 97% right now.
Well, all right.
So lots coming out this week.
Yeah. And then the one last bit, they've announced casting for the Roadhouse reboot.
Yes.
So let's rewind for just a moment. Yeah, okay. There's a Roadhouse reboot, huh?
Yeah, we talked about this before.
I don't quite remember it.
I heard like rumblings of it. I didn't know it was actually going to happen.
It is going to happen.
Not quite sure what you do with it. I feel like there's ways you could camp it up. There's ways you could serious it up, and I don't think I'd really want that. Yeah. I was telling Randy off mic that I think they should queer it up.
Yeah.
And have this have gay Roadhouse.
Well, I feel
it's
like
for Amazon, right?
Yeah. What was the 21 Jump Street? I feel like you want to go the 21 Jump Street route.
I can almost guarantee you that's not what they're going to do. Yeah. I think they're going
to. I think I don't want that. I don't think I want that.
They're going to go to the gritty realism.
I think you're probably right. I think it's going to be bad.
The saving grace is the Jake Gyllenhaal who's been cast
so
as
that,
the lead.
Sure, so yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal is playing the role. Does this guy have? Does Patrick Swayze's character have a noble
his
name?
Roadhouse.
No,
Johnny Roadhouse.
No, God, what is his name?
Jack Roadhouse.
It's not Jack Roadhouse.
Roadhousington.
Robert House.
Robert House. Hi, I'm Robert House, and welcome to my Roadhouse.
That movie, I don't know, for those who haven't seen it, I do feel it's like sort of a perfect storm of camp. Like both self-serious and campy. It's trashy in all the best ways. It's got great, awful dialogue. Patrick Swayze is just the person for the job.
Yep.
He's good with the action stuff. Playing the kind of gimmick that he's, a philosophy degree student or
You're
whatever.
You're talking to like I've ever seen this movie.
You must know through pop culture. That's his deal.
I know it's nice, except not to be nice or whatever.
Yeah, that's the pop. Well, anyway, that is the hook. He has a philosophy degree, Randy, and occasionally breaks it out, but almost always as relates to being a bouncer. Anyway, I do recommend Roadhouse to the people.
Yeah.
I want to say you're going to want to have some drinks with it.
I mean,
what's his name, Nick?
I can't find
his name. Is Robert House?
It's not Robert. Dalton.
Dalton. Yeah, yeah.
I forget his actual first name, but yes.
But to us, Dalton. He's just Dalton.
He's just Dalton.
Anything else on the?
No, that's all the news.
John Dalton.
John Dalton. me and Dave and Nick and John Dalton will be back with you in a second. We're going to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the Wednesday, August 3rd, and it's a lot. It's a big DC week. There's other stuff, but DC like put a ton of stuff out this week.
Yeah. And once again, the Bat books kind of are show the path.
Yep, but
there's one
not,
outlier.
There's not all that one.
Yeah, I'm just saying that that they tend to spearhead things.
Well, the second issue of Chip Zdarsky's Batman is out. The really, really Jorge Jimenez's art on this is so beautiful.
It is. It's really good.
It is a Bat family book, like Batman, like Orphan and Spoiler and Nightwing and Robin and Oracle and the Signal. All show up in this.
I'm a little unsure with some of Zdarsky's choices here.
I'm all about it.
But
what do you mean? What are you unsure about?
There's just some...
He brings in some weird elements.
Some ideas that some past Batman writers have used.
Oh, it's the one that we talked about.
Yep. That, and there's some other stuff that I'm a little skeptical about.
I didn't get a chance to read this one. I actually really like that Spoiler has become a part of the Bat family.
Yeah, I love that.
That's a great refutation of, in some way, well, A, the character's always earned, she's earned her spot, Stephanie Brown. But B, to me, she represents the worst decision, some of the worst writing in the recent Batman years, which with Bill Willingham did.
Yes.
Where he killed the character off, only to have done it so awfully that they had to retcon it.
Yep. Yep.
And she came back more powerful than ever.
Like, kind of villainous for the... Yeah, it just was a very odd choice.
Terrible, but Obi-Wan, he struck her down and she came back, became more powerful than Bill William could ever imagine.
The idea that Batman is a team book is great, and I love that Cassandra Cain is there, and I love Nightwing.
Also
and
a fan of Cassandra
Tim Cain. Drake.
All really good. Also, there's a backup story that Chip Zdarsky is doing with an artist, Belen Ortega.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice as well. The Catwoman is basically tracking down the errant children of the Penguin to figure out who is killing the rest of them to get all the money.
That's fun.
It's a fun story, and I'm liking it. It also features the a robot executor of the will.
I was wondering, just flipping through that, what the hell is
He's
this
like
robot?
A big giant robot or something? It's very weird. Anyway, it's fun. I'm really liking the new Batman series. We've got the outlier from the Batman stuff. New Champion of Shazam. This is a new 4-part miniseries.
That is the title of it.
Yes.
What's it say?
New Champion of Shazam.
Okay.
Written by Josie Campbell.
Art by Doc Shaner.
Yeah. Which I love.
And that is some good art.
Shaner
it looks
stuff.
Actually different a little bit from his previous work.
It does.
But it's slightly more detailed, but it's really good.
I like Mary Marvel. I like the Shazam family. I was a little kind of thrown by some of the backstory that I didn't know that none of them had their powers anymore. It was all Billy.
Yeah.
Which I was a little taken aback by, because I like the whole family dynamic as being all Shazam people.
Right. But people are like, rest assured that she has the power.
But I
this.
Like her going to Vassar and sort of kind of trying to stake out
it's
a
her,
new
She's
kind
a
of,
freshman in college.
Yeah. Stake out a new way of life and everything, and then, of course, things go awry. And
it starts with her talking rabbit.
Yep. Yeah. Hoppy the Marvel Bunny, but not the Marvel Bunny.
Yep. It's just like as if like
it's
like
actually not even Hoppy. It's a bunny that is her roommate.
Yes, but she calls it Hoppy at some point.
It's clearly a nod to, for people who don't know, way back in like the golden age of comics when Shazam was created, and the rest of the Marvel family who people know from the movies and the comics. But one of the weirder incarnations was there was a rabbit that turned into like a big giant Bugs Bunny looking cartoon rabbit Shazam person. And over the years, in the same way that they've revisited Talkie Tawny in different ways, and at one point they kind of went with a Calvin and Hobbes type, where he was like in the imagination, this seems to be some new incarnation of Hoppy, where she's just, one day she's like, what, in her dorm or something, and the rabbit just like starts talking?
Maybe she's hallucinating.
Maybe so.
I also love Shaner's redesign of the costume.
It's good.
It's very kind of classic, but it's a few tweaks that really make it stand out.
Yeah.
Yep.
I also liked the villain's name, as silly as it is, the Disaster Master.
That's almost a, what do you call it, an Incredibles villain?
Yeah.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
For people who don't know, Shazam did not start out at DC, and in its original incarnation at, was it Fawcett Comics? Was a little bit more like the Incredibles, honestly. It was like kind of a slightly tongue-in-cheek comic. So I feel like is a good fit.
I was very pleased with this first issue.
Yeah, I liked it too. And I've always liked Mary Marvel. She's a cool... I like her getting the spotlight. Now, yeah. It's just a mini-series.
Yeah, it's just a four-issue.
Yep.
Then we've got... This is still Batman. I guess Batman adjacent at any rate. Yeah. Sort of Azrael. Azrael's a character that was introduced in the 90s, took over for Batman, was sort of an avenging angel.
Right, when Batman had his back broken, he took over. He was created to, in some ways, to ultimately to be the guy who couldn't handle Batman's job.
To show that Batman doesn't kill, and here's why.
Right, because that's what he was. He was kind of like a religious zealot, thought he was an angel, and had some link to, like, you know, a Templar, you know, conspiracy stuff. I've never particularly cared for the character. He has a great costume. One of the best costumes. Good job, Joe Quesada.
Yep.
And I've seen some good stories with him here and there. And this, they did a good job with it here. As complicated as his backstory has been, this, like, gives you just what you need so that it actually reads almost the way they would do it if they were rethinking it for just, like, an animated movie or a video game or something like that. So it's like, it's pretty straightforward. He's,
Well, there's two things.
Yeah.
One is the Sword of Azrael Dark Knight of the Soul. That's the one-shot that reprints the story from Batman Urban Legends. This were several short stories, so basically it makes up one, like, 32-page comic.
Right. It's just, they plucked the serialized stuff from a anthology comic and used it as... Because it's the creative team of the new series. Yeah. This was almost like their test drive of the character.
And does it end where this begins, essentially?
Not really. It's a completely standalone story. If you liked this at all, Nick, you should read it.
Yeah.
It's a good standalone story by the same artist and writer who this week also launched the new book.
Who doesn't like an insane man stuck in a monastery on a remote island who thinks he's an avenging angel?
Well, you know, I have to say, I'm not really, like, loving the notion of Christian zealotry these days, but in the fictional incarnation...
I don't know, I feel like this is a good interpretation of Christian zealotry.
Well, they managed to make him a character who is a decent person. He's trying to, like, put his violent past behind him, because basically the Templar people that, like, programmed him.
Yeah,
like, they literally, like, brainwashed him. The thing that I think they just call it the system, right?
Oh, the system. Yeah.
It's like so ingrained in him that he can barely keep it under the surface, and he's been at, like, this monastery trying to, like, push it down.
And
he's having some success.
He has to, like, recite, like, the... What is it that he recites? Like, the...
I don't recall. But he's at the monastery when a woman comes looking for him.
The deaths of saints. That's the only way he can.
Oh right, like
that,
he talks about
the
all
voice.
The different violent deaths of various martyrs.
Yes.
That seemed fitting for him. Yeah. They make him sometimes a slightly pitiable character, but in this he's like he's a heroic guy who's helping the lady who came to the monastery looking for him.
He is trying to redeem himself for his violent past.
Yeah. Right. And she's being hunted and he's trying to help her.
I really like
there's a fire sword.
There's a fire sword.
I really like the art. It reminds me of sort of Riley Rosmo.
I was trying to say,
somewhere between
like
Riley Rosmo and I'm going to say Mike Mignola just because of the sort of bulky characters with the thin legs that kind of he does. I liked it and sometimes I didn't like it.
Okay.
Like, it's overall, definitely, I think the overall aesthetic is pretty good, and the storytelling is good. And I liked that scene with the weird, like, angel...
The actual personification of what Azrael is.
Yeah, the biblical-style angel with, the, like, all the eyes and stuff.
Yeah, that
was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah.
Then there's a Batman White Knight Presents Red Hood. This is the Red Hood in this world where the Joker was the good guy.
Right.
It is Sean Murphy, but I believe it is a different artist.
Oh, really? I thought Sean Murphy drew all of that
Simone
stuff.
Simone DeMayo, who I believe is doing the Knight, Batman the Knight.
Ah, okay.
So when I don't want DeMustard, I want...
I want DeMayo. It could be DeMio, I don't know. It could be
and I think this introduces a new female Robin as well, if I'm
looks
not mistaken.
Looks like, yep.
So yeah,
this has been a popular ongoing like alternate world story.
Yeah, I mean, so, this is like the fifth one.
Yeah, it's been so popular basically that yeah, they're on the fifth one. At this point, I figure people know if they want it. But if you're just getting in and you want to start where it starts, what is it? A white or what's it called?
It originally started with White Knight.
White Knight.
Yeah. But yeah, if you're a Red Hood fan, though, you might want to just dive in on this, and you know, I'm sure they'll tell you what you need to know.
Yeah. Marvel has Edge of Spider-Verse number one. This is, I'm sure, they're getting ready for the
another Spider-Geddon or
Spider-Verse was supposed to be out in November.
Originally. Oh, right. This is just called.
This is supposed to come out. So, Dan Slott returns to write a little intro piece, which features Spider-Laird, the Scottish Spider-Man fighting the Redcoats.
Yeah.
There is a big Aranya story that's sort of the focus. That's, the Spanish Spider-Woman.
Yep. Initially introduced before they had done all the Spider-Verse stuff recently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, like, I think she came out, unfortunately, at a time where people were like, enough with all the Spider-Man peoples.
Now
people are like, we can't get enough of them. So it's Aranya's time to shine.
Also features Madame Web or... Julie
Carpenter,
yeah, Madame Julie Web, Carpenter.
Which I feel like is probably not a coincidence. And then we've got a Spider-Man Noir story that finishes out. And then, of course, there's Spider-Rex, the dinosaur Spider-Man.
The T-Rex.
Which Marvel is already so keen on that they've released a toy of.
Oh, of course they did.
They did it for, like, one of their 3¾ line or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, their all-ages line. It looks cool, but I'm like, man, okay, this makes a lot of sense.
Spider-Verse does seem to be the book that is going to introduce a bunch of new Spider-Man variants, and maybe we'll get another Spider-Punk, which, by the way, does have a fourth issue this week, is really good, or a Spider-Gwen, or something else. They've been doing well with that. Peach Momoko is back with the new Demon Wars. This is the Iron Samurai, which looks to be sort of a riff on Civil War.
Yep. I saw variations on Iron Man as of course, there's a samurai, but also Black Panther was in there. Yep. Maybe, I don't know if he's like some kind of animal spirit.
Carnage is like a demon.
Yep, Carnage is like an Oni. And, it looked cool. As always, the art looks good. I haven't read it, though.
Yep, very pretty. Image has a book called The Dead Lucky, which is about a new character in the Radiant Blackiverse.
Yep.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, I didn't realize it either, Nick. And in fact, they kind of hide that, but they have all these... It's like giant robots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it does look like the Radiant Black costume iconography and stuff.
Yeah, it does.
When you say that, it made sense, but I did not catch it from reading the first issue.
No, I didn't
either. If you've been liking Rogue Sun and Radiant Red, I think Radiant Red just ended, so this is their, like, hey, more stuff in the Radiantverse. There's a very strange image book called Golden Rage, which seems to be about older women being sent to this island and then fighting amongst themselves Battle Royale style, and I don't know where they're going to go from here, but it's an interesting first issue. By the way,
that one Dead Lucky, the one that's the in the Radiant Black universe, which they call the Massive Verse...
Yes,
because
they did Supermassive as their one shot that did sort of tie it all together.
Did you mention, like, I think this is at least a sort of unique perspective that she's like she's a former veteran, the lead character.
That's right.
Who's kind of working through processing some PTSD.
Yeah.
And I thought that's an interesting perspective for a character. It's not the first time that we've seen an ex-military character. It's just but kind of in this setting, I think it is.
Yeah.
Then there's Survival Street, in which a fascistic U.S. government shuts down Sesame Street, and the puppets, seemingly animated puppets, not with puppeteers...
Take back the streets.
...become freedom-fighting... Sesame Street Antifa.
Yes.
Very weird. Not played remotely straight, but, yeah, very... Very weird.
You know what it reminded me of? Like, it's not him, but it's like the kind of thing Mark Russell might do. His kind weird brand of satire.
100%. Yeah. Other than that, there's a lot of notable books this week. The finale of The Closet, the Image horror book we've all been enjoying.
That's James Tynion's book.
The third issue of Dark Crisis, which has, as of issue 4, been retitled Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yep.
And some pretty notable...
Big developments. DC vs. Vampires number 8, as they close in on the end of that. Poison Ivy number 3, Spider-Man number 4, and Moon Knight number 14, where Moon Knight's various personalities show up for the first time.
Okay.
Anything? Did I miss anything?
No.
Junji Ito coloring book.
Oh, the Junji Ito coloring book.
Yes. For those who... I think at this point people know who Junji Ito is. He's the horror master of manga. And they took some of his super creepy drawings and made a coloring book out of them.
You two so, can do some spirals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or some gyo.
It sounds like Nick is telling people to do drugs here.
Yeah, it's true.
Do the spiral, kid.
Do the spiral.
That's the new thing.
Anyway, that is Comics of the Week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some movies. And maybe TV. And maybe a podcast. Who knows? Okay, so we had a couple things we were going to talk about last week, and then San Diego Comic-Con news just overwhelmed us.
Yes.
And overwhelmed everyone. So we're going to talk about those this week. And one of them is not timely, is not as timely, it just is something you've been listening to, Dave, and that is the Mark Maron's WTF podcast.
Yeah. You know, every once in a while we'll just throw out a podcast that we're listening to. Yep. This is one of those podcasts.
Yep.
This is actually sort of a reaction against other podcasts that we've recommended, which I still recommend, but every once in a while, like, so some of the ones we've mentioned are about processing news stories, especially recontextualizing older news stories. So, like, I'm talking about Behind the Bastards and You're Wrong About,
yep.
And there's
the Dollop.
The Dollop. Yeah. All great podcasts, all very... kind of dispiriting. Like, they can bring you down, these podcasts. They're good, but...
I mean, there's a lot of, like, humor and jokes and laughter involved in those.
A very fun ride, but you might end any given one of those by saying, boy, like, people are messed up. Oh, the America's messed up. You know, it's you might feel like you're, like, there's no winning.
And after, like, 20 or 30 or so is in a row, yeah. It kind of gets a little disheartening.
Just kind of pause a little bit. Yeah, so. Yeah. Mark Maron has been around doing his interview podcast for, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
It's funny thing is, like, I don't even know if I listened to his stand-up before. Like, I probably have seen it somewhere, but I can't recall. That's what he sort of was known for before he became an interviewer, notable enough that he, like, did a big interview with Obama in, like, 2016.
Yeah, I listened to that. It was a great interview, and I listened to a few of the others. He's a really good interviewer.
Yeah, he's primarily known for kind of, it's a sort of tight format, actually. He's got, like, about an hour. He talks to you, the audience, for about 10 minutes, just kind of just riffing on stuff, talking about what's going on in his life. Kind of pseudo-philosophizing occasionally. And then he jumps into an interview, often with people from the entertainment industry, comedians,
I was going to say, it's a large swath of, like, different types of people, though.
And I think he's got, like, the most recent, like, I don't know, 100 episodes is always available. And sometimes that will include episodes that are older episodes, but that they brought back because, like, an actor passed away or something like that. So I just kind of... I know. I listened to it because I follow Michael Mann, and he's about to have a book that's a sequel to Heat. And he did an interview with Mark Maron, and I was like, I don't know anything about Michael Mann, the person. I listened to it. I really liked the interview.
Is he what you expect Michael Mann to be?
Yes and no. He is the sort of self-serious guy who admitted, like, I think at some point Mark Maron brought up comedy, and he kind of was like, he's like, yeah, I don't really do that. He's like, that's not my genre.
Yeah, I've heard him talk on another podcast, and he is very kind of succinct and direct.
Yeah, he is. But, you know, what interests me about Michael Mann...
Is he like Liam Neeson? I want to do improv comedy.
He is a serious dude, but it's not that there were no laughs at all. He talked about his upbringing. And, like, one of the interesting things is... Like, he's actually a little more counterculture than you might expect from a guy who does all the cops and robbers stories.
Yeah.
But, like, we also think he did The Insider, you know, which has all this pushback against big tobacco.
Yeah.
Ali, which is definitely the story of a guy who's, you know, as far as, like, his role in America, pop culture, not just a great boxer, but a guy who pushed back against Vietnam and stuff.
I think what he gets involved in is just different characters. And he likes to think sort of all facets of that and kind of deep into it.
In fact, one of the things he talks about in the interview with Maron is that it's sort of like he kind of, like, knows the backstory of every character in, like, his movies.
Oh, yeah. I know on he plots it all out. He had a dossier for each character, which included, like, from birth to death.
Right. Like, you may never hear it said in the movie, but he knows what it is. So, like, when he's writing these characters, he knows their full story. And that's how the new Heat book emerged.
Which is weirdly what I'm excited for.
But what's his name? I mean, I think he's probably got some chops for
now
it.
Now I think he's talking about actually doing the movie.
Oh,
well.
Yeah, that's somehow going to happen.
What?
Yeah, it's definitely happening. Like, okay. It's already even in, like, pre-production.
Right,
I have no idea if any of the same actors will return. Like, will we see Pacino? But the the vibe I got is half his flashback, half is
was what happens with Val Kilmer's character.
Yeah, that's right. And unfortunately, Val Kilmer is probably not going to be able to play that character again.
Yeah.
But that said, it was, you know, even then, like, he came out in the mid-90s. Like, just the age difference, right. You know, in that time wouldn't have worked anyway.
Yeah.
But so when he's talking to Michael Mann, though, he talked about, like, he, you know, studied theater and stuff like that and in London to at least partially to avoid Vietnam. Vietnam and sort of general anti-war vibes were a big part of his sort of like teen years, and he was definitely a big thinker about it. Like when he talks about this, he talks with a pretty high degree of sophistication. It is not just some sort of generic hippy dippy stuff. Right. He's like, he was following that and a lot of other sort of anti-war protest movements around the world. And anyway, I learned definitely some stuff about Michael Mann I didn't know, including.
I mean, not to switch gears or anything, but you were telling me, like, one of your favorite episodes was
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen, which I don't think you're a huge fan of normally.
Not particularly. I'm just going to quick throw out some of the names that of the. I listened to a lot of the Tough Guy ones, so I also listened to the one on James Caan, Danny Trejo. Who was the other?
Yeah, but Danny Trejo is like one of the nicest people in the world.
But he talked about his checkered past and stuff. Danny Trejo used the phrase toxic masculinity to describe his own, like, the way he used to live and stuff like that. And you know, Maron said, he's like, you know, that's not a term that was really thrown around when we were kids. Right. And, you know, and Danny Trejo is like, he's like, yeah, but it's true. You know, he's like, he was...
I love Danny Trejo.
He's great. He was fantastic in it and very upfront. And they also talked to his son, who had gone through some, like, drug and crime problems, too. And he told all these great stories, including taking his son to a dinner with Robert De Niro, who was, like, the bad guy in Machete.
Yeah.
And I guess he was like, oh, no. He's like, my son gonna be able... He was like, be on your best behavior, right, to his kid. He's like, don't fuck up. This is Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And apparently he starts talking about, like, Robert De Niro starts talking about, like, some French cinema. And right out of the gate, like, Danny Trejo's worried. He's like, uh-oh. He's like, he's getting real indie and stuff.
Yeah.
And his son had studied a lot of that stuff and was able to hold his weight in the conversation. And he's like, and then he talks, like, with beaming pride about how happy he was with that night. And,
yeah,
you know, how much.
Awesome.
He's, you know what, one other story, who was it? Not James Caan, but... another movie, Tough Guy, Ray Liotta.
Yeah.
Ray Liotta was adopted, and he talks a lot about his adoption and both finding out, like, that he wanted to meet his birth parents. He just could not get past it mentally. He sort of felt abandoned and all that, and it's complicated stuff. And then he met them, and he definitely felt like he was glad that they had given him up, that it would have been, that it was for the right.
Just hearing from you talking about all these interviews, it's just like the way that Maron is able to sort of go in depth in people's lives. Because on the Ray Liotta, I think you were even telling me like his, was it his mother or somebody passed away, and that's why he had so much energy in that.
In Goodfellas, the first scene they filmed in Goodfellas was right, it was the week that his mother had died.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, I was just like, oh my God, that's insane. And it was a scene where he had to, like, be laughing in it and stuff. But I think it, like, maybe lent some nuance to the character, you know, as rough as that is.
Yeah.
And yes, that's the kind of the big thing with Maron is he kind of gets this, he gets people to sort of, like, let their guard down and just be talking to a friend. It's never a gotcha interview.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that. And I think everybody knows that when they go into it, and that's why they like to open up to him.
I think that's a good thing, because it kind of lets you in behind the veneer of this Hollywood and show that these people are actually humans.
Yeah.
And
so the Seth Rogen one you mentioned, that one came with a warning ahead of time. He said, he's like, there's a trigger warning for this episode for anti-Semites. He's like, Seth Rogen's Jewish, I'm Jewish. He's like, this is the Jewiest podcast you're ever going to hear. So if you're anti-Semitic, and he's like, well, go fuck yourself.
Seth Rogen toking it up the entire time?
No. honestly, he can talk about film and stuff very cogently.
Oh, no.
He does consistently have a kind of hilarious stoner's laugh. All the time. He's just like, no matter what, even if he's talking about something serious.
Rogen. Yeah. Yeah, his laugh is
hilarious. But the thing is,
he has a good laugh.
The thing is, Seth Rogen's pretty smart.
He
is extremely smart.
There's a good video that I found of him, like, a few years ago, just chanced across on YouTube, where he's talking about the difference when you're writing a movie between sort of plot and story.
Yeah.
You know, the idea being that, like, plot is sort of what happens to the characters. Story is what it's about, right? Yeah. The stuff that's really the thing is, and the way he kind of talked about that, I was like, oh wow, he's really thought about this. This guy who's, you know, even if he like only through experience, he knows a lot of stuff now. Anyway, it's a great interview and super fun. And, like, honestly, in a lot of ways, it's a deep dive on Jewish culture in that one. Yeah. And, you know, that is not my circle. And so I really enjoyed listening to them talk about it very candidly. Both of them, I think, are on the more secular side of things. So it was interesting to hear that perspective. And super funny, by the way. Just tons of funny stuff in that episode. They were having a great time.
I'm going to have to listen to more of these. Like I said, I'm only, like, 30 minutes into the Jesse Plemons one. And I wanted to listen to him just because I know he basically grew up in a small town outside of, I think, Waco or something.
Huh, okay.
And just sort of talking about sort of like his parents giving him sort of the wherewithal and like ingenuity to go to LA as a kid and like do like acting and stuff. And,
yeah.
Like supporting him into doing this. It was just, it was kind of cool.
Nick, I mean, you haven't listened to the Robert Eggers one, have you?
No, the Eggers one is on my list, and weirdly, I think the Tarantino one is.
The Tarantino one is super good. You know, one of the things I think I mentioned this that he talks about in that one is he was raised by his stepdad.
Yeah.
And when he got famous, his biological dad kind of came out of the woodwork, and there was some awkwardness, and it's not the kind of thing you can tell he loves talking about. But because the conversation was fairly easygoing, and Mark Maron...
Does Mark Maron hold his own against Tarantino? Because Tarantino can kind of, like,
he actually
grab
did say,
hold of everything.
He straight up said that when he... Like, the opening 10 minutes he records before the interview, he'll sometimes say... It's clearly recorded after the interview.
Because
he'll sometimes say, this was a crazy interview, or, like, we really bonded, or I didn't know what to expect. He was intimidated by Tarantino, just, and he also was like, what else can he say? He's a big talker.
Yeah.
He's like, probably talked about everything he needs to talk about. But I feel like he got him to talk about sort of more personal stuff than he usually does. And yeah, he talks about, like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood had just come out. He's got some great anecdotes to mention about that. You know, if you find Tarantino annoying, he's still annoying in this.
He's gonna be Tarantino, yeah.
But Maron has a way about him of, I think it's kind of like he can handle him.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's worth sampling. Just like, you know, if you're curious, the podcast is called literally WTF. It uses adult language, which I don't think it will scare off anybody here. But mostly it's like these are pretty good casual conversations. So yeah, just go like look up, find an actor or director or whatever that someone who interests you and you know, try one out sometime.
Yeah. Nick, you and I had talked. We were waiting to see if Dave was going to watch it. He did not get dragged into watching The Gray Man.
Oh, we knew that wasn't going to happen.
Probably.
It's about assassins. He doesn't like assassins.
The only thing that would have gotten me on board is the fact that it's the Russo brothers.
It's the Russo brothers.
But now that I've been hearing buzz that it stinks.
So it's the Russo brothers and Marcus and McFeely. This is the people who made Endgame and Civil War and Winter Soldier. And I did not hate The Gray Man.
No, I get where people...
I've heard it's fun.
I get where people are coming from, that it was so hyped and so kind of sought after, and it's got Chris Evans and Ryan Gosling.
Who plays the
Anna de Armas, Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, they used Anna de Armas way better than the most recent James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Did.
Oh, wait, I thought the Bond movie used her well, and actually it's just unfortunate that she stood out against the rest of the movie because the rest of it stunk.
Well, that's the thing. They didn't use her well. She was in like 10 minutes, and she should have been in that whole movie.
And
that's
Armas
probably true.
She's in the whole movie, and I think that's the thing. Is like, she's good in it the whole time. Everybody in this is good. There's some
Let me just quick ask,
sequences.
Is she pretty in it?
Yes.
Oh, God,
okay,
yes.
Well, maybe I'll watch it.
There's some fun action sequences, but if you compare this to any of the movies these guys have made, it comes off very poorly.
Well, it's definitely better than Cherry.
It's better than Cherry, but Marcus McFeely weren't involved in that.
Right. But
this is a
Russo.
Weird thing where the Marvel stuff, like, it was like the right confluence of things.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The Russos also were good on Community.
Like, yeah.
Like, didn't they do the paintball episode?
They did.
This isn't... The action here isn't as good as the paintball episode of Community.
I thought the action sequences and set pieces... There are set pieces that stick in my brain. I mean,
really?
The chain to a park bench, having an entire... I forget where they were. Prague? Or somewhere.
Wherever it was cheap to film.
It definitely... They did shoot at locations. It definitely felt real. Yeah. Except for some of it all feels a little glossy.
Let me ask this as the person who hasn't seen it. Just real quick, what's the poke? What's the premise?
So, the Gray Man is the reference to the lead character, Ryan Gosling.
Yep.
He was put in jail for something.
He killed his father
He killed his abusive father to protect his brother.
All right, sure.
And then he got put in jail. Billy Bob Thornton comes and recruits him as a, like, shadow operative for the government.
For the Sierra Project.
The Sierra Project.
Does he have, like, combat skills?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, they train him and kind
of... So this is, like...
La Femme Nikita?
He's been doing this for, like, 10 years, right?
Yeah. He is, like, the best of the best.
He opens with this thing where he basically finds out that the guy who's running the program after Billy Bob Thornton is retired might be corrupt.
Uh-huh.
And he has this information. He has a knock list, basically. You know,
yeah.
He's got one of those things. he is trying to get that, but the he's being framed. And they bring in Chris Evans, this psychopath, to hunt him down.
Okay.
Russos are good at homaging things, because there's a lot of great homages to previous movies.
Chris Evans can't play a psychopath.
He does. He plays it very well, actually.
He does. He does a great job.
He's so nice.
He played a good psychopath in Knives Out.
It's true. It's true.
This is a different stripe of psychopath. This is like a Bugs Bunny psychopath.
It is cartoonish. And this whole thing is cartoonish. Here's the thing. Ryan Gosling, playing sort of a snarky action hero type,
yeah.
I've seen that before.
Yeah.
It's in The Nice Guys. It's great. And so every time I was watching this, I was like, I could be watching The Nice Guys instead.
Oh.
And that should not be what I'm comparing. I shouldn't be
Is that the Shane Black thing? Yeah.
I should not be thinking, I'd rather be watching another movie I've already seen.
I never felt that. I didn't think it was, like, super propulsive and super memorable, but I had a good time watching
it. It's overly long.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How long is it?
It's like 220.
You generally want lean and mean. Because you said it was kind of... Y'all said it was kind of glossy, right?
Yeah.
If a movie is glossy, you want it to be an hour 45.
Yeah.
And they're trying to overcomplicate a plot that is not that complicated. He's got... Billy Bob Thornton has an adopted daughter.
I feel like all Bond movies and everything influenced by Bond movies is kind of like that. They're like... Well, they're a little embarrassed if their plot is too basic, so they overcomplicate them.
Here's the thing. I should not be going, Red Notice is better than this. But Red Notice is better than this.
I wholeheartedly disagree. This is better.
What's Red Notice?
Red Notice was the Netflix movie with The Rock and Gal Gadot and Ryan.
Oh yeah, yeah, kind of pop sort of.
And it's stupid, but it's well aware that it's stupid. This one seems to think it's not stupid, and I find that insulting.
I probably agree with you on this. I haven't seen it, but like just knowing where my headspace is, I probably. Agree
and then with you'd come back to my side because you find Ryan Reynolds annoying.
I'm not talking more about his assessment of this, not necessarily comparing it to Red Notice.
But also, just in watching it, like, I'll never watch this again. They're doing a sequel, I'm not sure I'll watch the sequel. I just, like, it was fine, it was a 2-hour, 20-minute divergence of time, but I'm like...
Nick, would you say that it's one of those that, like, with the amount of talent involved, that it should have been better? Or that you lament that it was not at least a little bit better?
Yes, because it should have been better. Unfortunately, this was, like, under a... This is in development hell forever, and the Russo brothers only recently attached themselves. It was actually supposed to go to a different... I forget what director it was supposed to... My brain...
In the end, like, although that's always interesting backstory, however something got made, there is a finished product.
And the thing is, like, everything goes through this. We've seen all the... How things got made on Netflix. But I
feel like I'm talking influence here. The Russo brothers have a certain style that they've definitely shown in the MCU movies, and I think that's their mode now.
Yeah.
And that's what they do with their... Because this had a lot of, like, MCU glibness and this humor.
This is what people think the MCU is. It was not as clever. It was not as fun.
I don't know. I feel like the last 30 minutes of every MCU movie has a feel of what The Gray Man is.
I think that's insulting the last 30 minutes of every Marvel movie. And
I'm not saying... I don't...
Are you saying that there's a lot of CG people punching each other?
I mean, here's the thing. I'm not disagreeing with you about the last 30 minutes of every Marvel movie, but I don't think this is anywhere near as good.
Yeah.
I really disliked this. I wanted to like it a lot more than I did, and I think that's why I disliked it. If this was just another inoffensive thing, it's kind of like, what's the different one for the Free Guys of Free Guy that they made, that Netflix made? The time travel-y one.
Oh, it was so memorable that I've forgotten.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
The people who made Free Guy, including Ryan Reynolds, made this time travel thing where he goes back and there's a kid version of himself. It looked super fun. Free Guy was super fun, way better than any right to be, and then this movie was disappointing.
Yeah.
And I feel like Netflix is just churning out disappointing movies. I'm going to blame Netflix for this one. Same way I blame Prime for ruining a bunch of the stuff on there. Some executive there is like, take this and make it boring.
Sometimes I just want a popcorn flick, and Netflix on occasion can give me a good time.
I don't know. In watching this, I was like, I could be watching Winter Soldier or The Nice Guys right now, and I'd be happier. And I've seen both those movies. So anyway, Nick says, go watch The Gray Man if you want a popcorn flick. I say, go watch The Gray Man if you've already watched everything else.
And Dave says, avoid it because we've got to just stop making movies about hitmen. Oh my God, please. For the love of God.
You're never going
He's
to.
He's a super spy, Dave. Has that changed anything for you?
He's basically a hitman.
It's essentially the American version of Bond.
Yeah.
So also on my trip, I watched, on my way back, I had like a 4.5 hour flight, so I downloaded this new Indian, it's not Bollywood, it's from like another part of India.
Okay.
But it's Bollywood-esque, like if you look at it, you'd be like, oh, this is a Bollywood movie.
Yeah.
Called RRR.
Right. I've been hearing people mentioning this movie.
I read this deep dive article about the Indian politics and all this stuff and why. So basically in Indian cinema, I guess they really, it's like, the movie isn't like, it's not here or it's a property or an IP is not king.
Yeah.
There it's the actors. So okay. These are like two big actors. This is like if you put Pacino and
De Niro
in the same movie.
Right.
But except instead of that, they're big action movies. They're probably like Schwarzenegger and Stallone.
Okay.
So RRR takes place in 1920s India. It's under British colonial rule. The colonials are cartoonishly evil.
Okay.
And the leads are an Indian cop who is like this super cop working for the British.
Okay.
And a tribal... like warrior protector who comes to town. So it opens with a little girl. She's doing like henna tattoos for the governor's wife.
Yeah.
And the governor's wife is very enchanted. And she's like, I like her. I want her to come live at the palace. Take her. And so they throw a couple rupees at the family, and then they take the girl and they kidnap her, basically.
Uh huh.
And one of the lead characters is the protector of this tribe who basically goes in is going to go and rescue her.
Right.
And he hooks up with the resistance to British rule. The other one is the guy who is, like I say, he's super cop. It opens with a riot outside the palace.
Uh-huh.
And this super cop, some guy throws a bottle and it hits the governor or the police chief. Uh-huh. And the guy's like, go arrest that guy. And this guy leaps over the fence and fights like 100 people to get this one guy and bring him in. It's crazy over-the-top action martial arts. There's actually a dance scene in it. There's music. There's a lot of music. The lyrics are very on the nose.
Yep.
I
will say, by the way, if you're going to characterize somebody as cartoonish villains, British colonizers,
fair call. And then there's a subplot about romance. Each of them has a romance. There's a buddy that the two of them team up to team a girl who's fallen off a bridge without knowing who they are. So they're like best buds.
Yeah.
But we know that they're on opposite sides. So a little bit of Infernal Affairs.
Right. Right. This was a common thing in John Woo too. The killer.
Yeah.
And Hard Boiled, I think both did some version of that.
So yeah, but then there's also a twist that the cop is not what you think he is, and you find that out. This movie is 3.5 hours long, guys.
Oh, my goodness.
Do not watch it as one. The only reason I watched it all as one was because I was on a flight and I had it downloaded.
But did you enjoy it?
I did. I really enjoyed it. But it is a long movie.
Yeah.
It's very stylized. But there are some bonkers action sequences in this.
Okay.
I don't want to give too much away, but there is an assault on the governor's palace that is just spectacular.
Okay.
I see that Ray Stevenson is in it.
Who's Ray Stevenson?
I played the Punisher, and
maybe he may play the governor then.
Yeah, I think he does play the governor.
It is a fantastic action comedy romance musical that I would recommend everyone watch in chunks of 3 hours. Uh-huh. Watch the first hour; you'll know basically where to stop, and then because there's a lot of story here.
Not in 3 hour chunks, but in three one hour chunks.
Yes.
No, watch it in 3 hour chunks. Just watch the movie.
I know that's that you watch the movie and then you watch all but the last half hour.
Well, it's in 3 hour chunks. It's so you watch 3 hours and then you wait a day for that last 7 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. This was super fun. It was better than almost anything else. In fact, I think it was better than anything else I watched that weekend.
Okay.
And it's I've never seen a Bollywood movie, and now I'm like, oh, I kind of want to see some more of this.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
This is kind of like sometimes the way I'm introduced to other cultures' cinema is through their big budget action movies.
Yeah.
Like Brotherhood of the Wolf was, I believe, at least at the time, and maybe still for all I know, was like the highest budget French movie. Like it just was. And like that's a super fun action, horror, somehow martial artsy kind of movie. So yeah, maybe I'll try and catch this one.
This is worth a look. It definitely earned its hype. And if you're really curious, there's a deep dive into the politics of it all, which is fascinating. Oh. Learned a lot about Indian politics I did not know.
Okay.
They're dealing with their own super right-wing thing right now. And RRR, for all that is good, has some propaganda elements to it, which is interesting to hear about.
Right, yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Then I think y'all were going to talk about a video game y'all been playing, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, this game is like 4 or 5 years old.
I was going to say, we're coming to it a little bit late.
Yeah, but the good news is you can get it for like 20 or 30 bucks or something.
Oh, I got
like
it for
that.
$12.
Okay, yeah, right on. I think we both got versions that were like sort of the Game of the Year version where you get all the DLC and stuff comes with.
I got cool skins for my BD unit.
Yep. And this is a Jedi kind of game. It's called Jedi Fallen Order, and it's set in the Galactic Civil War era. What are they? The original trilogy era. Yeah,
exactly.
And I guess before the events of... It's before the events of A New Hope, right?
I believe it is, yes.
And this is a game that is a third-person action game with Jedi powers and stuff, somewhat influenced by like games like, I think, Uncharted and Tomb Raider, but also I think a little bit by Dark Souls. It has tougher boss fights in it, slightly frustrating puzzles occasionally where you're like, oh, I was supposed to force lift that and use these? Okay. But anyway, Nick, let's tell them about the basic premise, because like part of what is really good about the game is the graphics and the characters and stuff.
Yeah, it opens with sort of Cal Kestis, a former Jedi.
You don't actually even know that at the beginning. He's just a guy who looks like he's like working at like a scrapyards, like a whole planet where like massive capital ships, Star Destroyers and things like that are scrapped by the like, you know, big robot stuff that cuts off giant chunks of them. And, you know, like, when you're learning the game, Cal is, like, moving around, monkey climbing around on stuff, like big, you know, massive cranes and things like that.
They're taking apart a Republic cruiser, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, like, from the Clone Wars era. And just, like, the sense of scale on it is pretty amazing. It's like you can always see far off into the distance on the planet at any given time. And there's this sense of, you know, it's like him and his blue-collar buddies, including a big old alien dude who's his best buddy. But, yes, you will shortly find when his friend takes fall? Something? I don't remember.
Yeah, they're trying to, put grav lifts on, like, a piece of the Republic Destroyer so it doesn't, like, fall.
Yeah.
And I think he slips off of it or something, and he's
going to fall to his death, but he force grabs him. And that puts him on the radar of the Inquisitors, right?
Empire.
If you've just been watching Obi-Wan,
Is it the same Inquisitors in this game, or is it just like more Inquisitors?
So this is these are different ones. This is the second sister and seventh sister.
Okay.
I have played. Well, I haven't played. I watched my son play some of this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens is early on you end up kind of like joining up with a crew. I actually kind of can't quite remember how you do. There's an alien guy who's like got four arms, who's like the same dude as the pilot in Solo.
Yeah. I noticed one of those dudes in the Andor trailer, by the way. I guess they're making that race maybe a thing.
Yeah. Although that looked like a different kind.
That looked like the Maz Kanata.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's four arms.
I think it's a different four-armed race.
What?
Yeah, I know.
More than one four-armed race.
Let them be, Randy.
That'd be like having a whole bunch of people who had two arms in the world. That's weird.
That's super weird.
Yeah.
I think you're on their radar somehow. I guess they're looking for... Maybe they're doing Republic scanning of...
He's a kind of lovable, low-life pilot who's got a gambling background that has him on the radar of some crime syndicates.
Yep.
And then there's a woman in it who's... Oh, she's like old by Star Wars standards, like, I don't know, 40 or something like that.
She was a Jedi.
Who's a former Jedi who has, like, a kind of a dark backstory and a reason for why she won't use her powers anymore.
She sort of closed herself off to the Force.
Yeah, but, and, like, I mean, this game is old enough that I'm not worried about a spoiler warning. She was, like, tortured into revealing where her Padawan was, like, in hiding.
Yeah.
And then they, like, got to her Padawan and, like, broke her with, like, Sith stuff or whatever and brainwashed her into becoming an Inquisitor.
Yeah.
So it is messed up, and there's some dark stuff in this. But Cal Kestis, by the way, your character, is played by the dude who I think people may know best from Gotham.
Yeah.
He played Jerome on Gotham, which I didn't see enough to see this, but Jerome was the guy who they were intimating was the Joker, or some incarnation of the Joker. And in the episodes I saw, he did a really good job. He's got very red hair. And the guy doing, and as a, you know, voice actor, and I'm sure they did all the motion capture and all that stuff with him, I think he does a great job. He is a good, classic, kind of Star Wars-y hero.
Yeah, the actor's name is Cameron Monaghan.
Cameron Monaghan, okay.
Nick,
wouldn't you say he's kind of a classic hero mode, sort of a little reluctant, but, like, there when you need him kind of guy. And through the game, he has to regain the Jedi powers that he learned as a Padawan because he's been, you know, he's been kind of in hiding for a bit, and it's kind of left him. Kind of the way it has, I guess, in Obi-Wan.
I think they're kind of trying to say that the Force, if you kind of block yourself off from it, it kind of, like, dwindles inside of you. And you sort
it's not
of
exactly
to...
like muscle memory where you could just, like, instantly go back.
Yeah. Which I think is a really cool idea.
We both started playing this while we were watching Obi-Wan, I think. Mm-hmm. And it actually ties in perfectly with it because it's got Inquisitors in it. It's got a, just like Obi-Wan, who is like kind of like lost his mojo. Cal starts out that way. And so as you get your Jedi powers back in it, in this game, that's the conceit is like not that you are learning them for the first time, but you are recalling them.
Yeah.
And this will often be accompanied by scenes that flash back to him training as a Padawan. And
what's his master's name?
Look, if you want to look that up, it's the same alien as the dude from Rebels.
Zeb.
He's one of those dudes.
Right. Was that early on? I don't know if I saw that.
He shows up periodically.
They show him pretty regularly early on. And so, like, oh, if you, like learn, like, wall running, that's an early thing you learn.
Jaro T'Pol,
yeah. You learn to, like, run along walls all Matrix style in this early on. But whenever you gain back a power like that, there'll be some flashback sequence where you're, like, in a training room and you're with him and he, like, you kind of work through getting to be able to do that. It's like it shows the Padawan training.
They're Lasat. That's the
race?
Or their race name, yeah. They're really cool. They're big, kind of burly purple people with a... weird kind
he
of,
is giant. He looks like he's like about 10 feet tall.
But there's a sequence that I think I just got to very recently, and you were you had gotten to that kind of takes the.
It shows Order 66 when it happens, and he's a Padawan, and his master is like, "We need to get out of here now." And they sort of get split up, and there's
you see the clone get the Order 66 from the Emperor.
Yeah,
and he's
starting to raise his gun, and this dude is a little too quick on it. He like he stabs him. He senses it before,
and then
it
he
happens.
Takes out like 100 clones all by himself.
Kind of like what you wish. I wish they had been the case in Clone Wars that you saw these amazing last stands.
I
instead
feel like
the
they're
Jedi,
they're fleshing that out a little bit, but
so many of the Jedi in the Clone Wars movie.
Oh, they just got one shot.
They just got one shot killed by a bunch of clones. It's like if you just. As if you, when you if you weren't looking, a clone could just walk up behind you and pop you, and like, just didn't feel legendary enough for the way Jedi are supposed to be. But this makes up for that. Anyway, you are traveling around. Randy, you mentioned the knock list from what do you call
Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible, and this has a similar type of plot. There is a list of like Jedi Force sensitive kids or whatever throughout the galaxy,
and a holocron.
And he feels like Cal feels like he could maybe restart the Jedi Order if he could track them down. There are some moral questions like, oh, well, if you do this, aren't you also putting them on the radar of the Empire, potentially? And so those flow through the story. But you travel around to about 4 or 5 different planets.
Like, notable planets. It's Dathomir, the Darth Maul's home planet.
A few others that were either invented for this or that I don't know well.
Kashyyyk.
There's, like, sort of, like, a rain-swept sort of planet.
Yeah.
And these are, like, really well-realized graphically. Like, they feel like places that are, I would like to see in the movies.
Yeah, the Kashyyyk opening sequence where you're infiltrating one of the AT-ATs.
Yeah. You have to, like, it's like going through the swamp and, like, wrecking Wookiee stuff. And your job is to get on board it and take over the thing. So it's because it's like in this swampland, it's all covered with moss and hanging vines and stuff. And you have to use the all climby, you know, think Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
You have to like scale its leg while it's walking. And while Saw Gerrera's like rebel troops are flying around in ships shooting at it.
Yep.
So you're like climbing along the side and then under the head of the walker while it's like big full guns are. And then, you know, the sound design is super good. Like when you hear those guns pounding right next to you. Eventually you like get in through a hatch in the top, like a turret, and you get to go in through, it's the most elaborate interior I've ever seen on a walker.
Yeah, it's cool.
Until you eventually take it over, and then it's like, now you're driving the bus.
And you just destroy
things.
Yeah,
you start blowing up AT-STs and transports and turrets. And
I find this game equally parts stunning and equally parts super frustrating.
Yes, the story and the characters and the settings are great. The gameplay...
Well, and it's like the way it kind of puts you in the Star Wars world of, like, here's you're fighting an AT-ST. You're inside an AT-AT. Well,
and my buddy Fothery, who had recommended it to me years ago, the way he described it, he said that the Jedi in this, the reason he liked it over something like Force Unleashed, which actually I like overall a bit better as a game,
which I never played,
still recommend it.
Yeah.
But the reason he liked this is because it was the vision of Jedi he wanted, the almost like a lone samurai warrior traveling through the galaxy, righting wrongs, but not beholden to like any Jedi bureaucracy.
He just likes Jedi hunted. I guess.
But the gameplay can be like the difficulty level is a bit high on it. There's some frustrating battles, not just regular battles, but like specifically the boss battles are very fucking hard.
If I get to like 5 times, I'm just like, oh my god, kill me now.
Yeah, I did that thing where I would go and I would look up how to beat the boss and like still lose to him.
Yeah.
Because it's the timing is difficult. For you Dark Souls fans out there, it's probably a cakewalk. But
you have to like parry like at the absolute like perfect time to
right.
actually do a damn thing, and it's
yep. And a lot of times you're like,
press a button and kill something.
And a lot of times you're like, oh, I'm trying to fend off the Scout Walker, and like two Night Sisters from Dathomir are attacking me, and now there's like a like something else too, and I'm like, it's just too much. And so I eventually came up with, I will accept a slight loss of face, and I will lower the difficulty before the boss battles.
I think we'd also be remiss talking about BD1.
Yeah, it has a particularly awesome droid companion.
They always do the good droids in the video games.
They
yeah,
do.
Actually, in every maybe we just need a whole thing about droids. Has Star Wars ever done a droids? Oh, right.
But they actually, Clone Wars did a droids, like, 3-episode part, and I actually really, really like it.
Yeah, but like, I mean, K2SO, yep. BD-1, what's HK?
Yep.
There's always a good droid.
You know, the K2 droids, you run into them in this, and they're brutal. They'll like pick you up and throw you to the ground and just pound you and stuff like that. They're
scary.
They are pretty scary in it. Eventually, as you gain back your powers, you find better ways to take them out. Find lots of big creatures and stuff too. There's a pretty amazing sequence where you find a legendary bird on Kashyyyk that's it's like the size of the Rock in mythology, not the Rock the wrestler, but the ROC from Arabic lore.
Yeah.
You know, it like has a wingspan that's like 100 feet or something
yeah,
like that.
It's
massive,
enormous.
And at first, I thought I was going to have to fight it, but then I find out that you actually manage. You're supposed to help it,
befriend it, yeah.
And you'll like ride it around and stuff.
That's
it's
cool.
pretty cool.
Well, that whole sequence of like climbing the world tree and Kashyyyk was very cool.
Yeah, there's a great sense of place and all that. Overall, this is a recommended game, and part of the reason it went onto my radar is because there's a sequel coming out.
Yeah,
and I was thinking, oh, I'm watching Obi-Wan. I'm enjoying this. This looks like a game that sort of fits that vibe, and it does.
It does.
I think Nick and I, you, we would both give it the slightly qualified recommendation.
Yeah.
Just know that the difficulty level is high, which you know, if you care about that kind of stuff, drop the.
Some
you
can't like, oh,
actually.
That's not hard at all.
Yeah,
I'm, like,
I'm well, sure they are.
Well, then I am a horrible game person, and
I don't got time to fight a boss 10 times in a row.
I
just
will say,
won't do
this
it.
This is the first video game I've played in like a while.
Well, it's good timing for you because you're building a Star Wars display for the store.
True, I am definitely in Star Wars mode right now.
Yeah. Something
to be there for a while. I
something
think.
To play while we wait for
well,
Andor.
This damn game made me buy Cal Kestis's lightsaber too that I'm gonna build. So.
He's got a cool double lightsaber in it, like Darth Maul.
But good.
I just found out like the backstory on the last. I got to that point in the game, and I was very like I like it even more now.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of cool story and like great voice acting and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, if you put it on, if you know, even if you are a person who does not like the high difficulty, if you were to play this just on what the difficulty
mode.
Called story mode, I think you'd get a good bit out of it. Like it is just a cool Star Wars movie to feel like you're walking through.
Well, this guy's been interviewed and he's played it coy. Like, are you gonna reprise your role in like anything live action? He's like, oh, I can't. I can't talk about that. So
I want to see Cal in a live action.
I
hope BD-1.
I would love for them to show up. I think it would.
Would
be
he
very
be
cool.
in the Andor period?
Oh,
no.
I believe he's working in the scrapyards. Then
he's young. He basically is like 10 when Order 66 happens.
Okay.
So he would be into like the like Obi-Wan.
But that's there's like a gap of like I don't know 10 or 15 years between the end of the Clone Wars, you know, like basically the Emperor becoming Palpatine and like the start of it. So he could be Well, it depends on when Andor takes place, because Andor is, like, right before, or, like, a few years before New Hope, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, Andor doesn't, but Rogue One does.
Yeah, right. Rogue One is right before.
It's right in New Hope.
But we don't know, like, how much before Rogue One is Andor.
I guess it's Andor...
like, a few... like, definitely some years.
Is Andor in Rebels era?
It must be.
Or is Rebels before?
Yeah, because they're, it's like when they're pushing back against the
Empire.
Because
Rebels had Mon Mothma and sort of a little bit of that in Bail Organa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if Cal could show up in that, but... if they found a way, it'd be cool. And if not, they should just do something else with him because the actor is good.
If he's not helping the former Jedi and Force-sensitive kids that are in the Underground Railroad of Star Wars from Obi-Wan, then he should be.
Yeah,
it is funny because, like, you know, originally in Star Wars, like, Luke was like, it was like he was literally the last person to be trained as a Jedi.
A lot of Jedi.
That's going on all over.
You gotta,
Ahsoka was out there.
You gotta fudge a little bit of the original movies to make all this extended universe stuff
it's
work.
It's true.
I'm okay no prizing it. I like the I like the surviving Jedi and them trying to do it. I like the surviving clones.
Well,
I like the
when they decided to do the remakes and remake the original the three original movies.
Here's the thing.
They'll fix all of them.
I don't think they're ever going to reboot Star Wars. They're not. I don't think in the cards.
They're not gonna.
I think it's kind of worked a little bit the way the Marvel has for the comics, which is to say, you'll poke and prod at it and slightly retcon things
sometimes
through newer projects.
Sometimes you get the 90s era X-Men stuff and you just have to make it work.
That's right. It's just like, arguably that's kind of what the Clone Wars was. They had to
fix it. Episode one is Chuck Austin? Is that what you're saying?
No, I was talking about the 90s X-Men cartoon, which is actually better than Chuck Austin.
And better than the prequels.
Yeah, that's true. Anything else?
No, I think that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.